Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg, here with my engineer, Mike Murphy, and Anna Banana, who will be joining in a little bit later. Thank you for listening in. Before we get started with the news from Dennis Hart, who is sending us the Iowa news from California, a quick look at the weather. Skies are expected to clear up by tonight, with ensuing temperatures remaining warm and mild. Expect sunny and warm, climbing up to 77 by Wednesday. But then winter will begin to set in. It should stay in the 40s at night, but we should see a drop in temperature for the rest of the week, starting on Thursday. We'll be in the low to mid-50s, and after today, we really shouldn't see any precipitation this week. Now, here's Mr. Dennis Hart with a roundup of news from around Iowa. Dennis?
Coronavirus continued to make big news around Iowa this past week. The death toll from the virus went up, reaching 1,460 by yesterday. The number of people infected by the virus also continued to rise to about 100,000 yesterday. The Des Moines Register reported that none of those infections involved Iowa's members of Congress. But the paper also reported that the state's congressional members and their staff members are not being tested on a regular basis. That story came as the coronavirus spread through the White House and Congress last week. Meanwhile, White House experts said that Iowa continues to see more than twice as many coronavirus infections as the national average. The White House Coronavirus Task Force said that community transmission has remained high across the state for the past month, with the result being what it called many preventable deaths. Iowa had the sixth highest coronavirus transmission rate in the nation a week ago. Among the places the virus is spreading, Iowa's two state institutions for people with severe disabilities. 30 residents and 45 staff members were said to be infected with the coronavirus at the Glenwood Resource Center and the Woodward Resource Center. Those centers have 315 residents. And the hospitalization rate around the state from the coronavirus rose to its highest count in 5 months last week. Governor Reynolds called the rising hospitalization rates disappointing and said in her words, "Sadly, it's what can happen when we are experiencing community spread." She said in spite of the rising numbers, the state's hospitals can handle the surge. The governor urged everyone to take precautions such as social distancing, wearing masks in public places, and washing hands frequently. The governor also addressed questions about recent pictures showing her without a mask at an indoor campaign event. An official with President Trump's re-election campaign had shared pictures of Reynolds without a mask in a room of about 24 people in Sioux City. The governor said those photos did not show the precautions she took. In another coronavirus-related story, the children of a Tyson Foods meatpacker in Columbus Junction who had died from the virus sued the company over what they said was a lack of protective measures for company workers. Pedro Cano's family said he had worked on the Eastern Iowa pork processing plant's line in late March and April without a mask or gloves. Cano started to feel symptoms of the virus on April 2nd, 4 days before the plant was closed because of rapidly spreading virus infections. In response to the lawsuit, a Tyson spokesperson said, quoting now, "Our top priority is the health and safety of our workers." Meanwhile, last week, word that a Southwest Iowa care facility had been fined $20,500 for its handling of resident care during the virus pandemic. A 60-page state inspection report showed the Oakland Manor facility had failed to implement an infection control program and did not isolate residents for a minimum of 10 days after coronavirus symptoms first surfaced. The report also said staff at the facility wore incomplete or improper personal protection equipment and cited numerous occasions where staff failed to complete proper hand hygiene while caring for patients. And the Des Moines Register reported last week that the State Department of Public Health was refusing to disclose the number of nursing home workers who had been infected with or died from the coronavirus. The department has been releasing only combined staff and resident numbers for both infections and deaths in Iowa nursing homes. The agency has refused to separate the number of staff deaths and infections from the number of resident deaths and infections. In Iowa City last week, there was word that Mercy Hospital would lay off 29 employees because of losses suffered during the coronavirus outbreak. The layoffs will be effective November 21st. Meanwhile, last week, word that a special education assistant at the Indian Hills Junior High School in West Des Moines had died from complications from the virus. 53-year-old Jennifer Crawford's death was announced in an email last Monday. It was not clear when or how she contracted the virus. In another story, the West Des Moines district announced that any snow days this coming winter will turn into virtual learning days. Both on-site and online students will have to log into the district's learning site in order to complete their classwork. There was also word last week that the Des Moines Public School District is facing millions of dollars in lost revenue brought on by declining enrollment due to the coronavirus pandemic. The district is down nearly 1,200 students. That could cost the district an estimated $8 million in direct financial support from the state, in addition to federal money tied to special education and English language learner students who have left the district. In Ankeny, the school board voted last week to return pre-kindergarten through fifth grade students to full in-person learning starting next Monday. Students will be required to wear masks at all times except during lunch. Students in grades 6 through 12 could return to full in-person learning as early as November 2nd. Also last week, Iowa State University announced that 15,000 fans would again be allowed inside Jack Trice Stadium for this past Saturday's home football game against Texas Tech. And the university also said that seating for the upcoming men's and women's basketball season at Hilton Coliseum would be capped at around 10% of the Coliseum's 14,000-seat capacity, or around 1,400 fans, if fans are permitted to attend the games at all, and no season tickets for basketball will be sold. In other news last week, word that President Trump would hold a campaign rally this coming Wednesday evening at the Des Moines International Airport. The rally will take place at 6 o'clock. Also last week, the U.S. Department of Agriculture reported that the number of crop acres that Iowa farmers are unable to harvest after the derecho that blew through the state in August had reached 850,000 acres. That's a more than 50% increase from last month, when the USDA had set the estimated loss from the derecho at 550,000 acres. The damage was compounded in late summer with a drought that encompassed much of the state. There was also word that Iowans had set a record for the most absentee ballot requests in an election. As of this past Friday, more than 703,000 people had requested absentee ballots. The previous high had been set in 2016, when 693,000 Iowans requested absentee forms. Of the 703,000 who had requested ballots this year, about 365,000 requests were by Democrats, 202,000 by Republicans, and 123,000 by voters registered with no party. Also last week, a judge temporarily blocked the Iowa Secretary of State from enforcing a directive preventing county auditors from mailing out pre-filled absentee ballot request forms to Iowa voters. The order from Judge Robert Hansen of the state's 5th Judicial District was issued on the first day county auditors started mailing absentee ballots to those who had requested them. Iowa Secretary of State Paul Pate had previously told county auditors they could distribute only blank absentee ballot request forms to voters, forms that voters would have to fill out themselves. Also last week, a federal lawsuit was filed on behalf of five racial justice protesters who were arrested and banned from the Iowa State Capitol after a disturbance between Black Lives Matter supporters and law enforcement last July. The American Civil Liberties Union of Iowa filed the lawsuit saying the Capitol ban is unconstitutional. In Indianola last week, the city council voted to move forward to appoint a new mayor. That job opened up when former Mayor Kelly Shaw resigned last month. Indianola residents can apply online, or they can print out the application notice that is on the city's website and deliver it to City Hall. Applications are due October 21st. There was also word last week that a national environmental group was alleging that over the past 3 years, two Iowa companies have repeatedly told the state and federal governments that they have exceeded the amount of pollution they can discharge into the Mississippi River. The group is the Environmental Law and Policy Center, and it said no action was taken against the two Iowa companies. There was more last week, including word that vandals had damaged a high trestle trail extension east of Ankeny when they rode bikes, then walked on and wrote in wet cement. The cement dried overnight before the damage was found. The vandalized section will cost $75,000 to fix. There was also word last week that the Dallas County Sheriff's Office said no charges would be filed against two teenagers who had set off a big explosion while they were target shooting. The sheriff's office received several calls from residents near Woodward and as far away as Madrid. The cause of the explosion was said to be an exploding compound. Sheriff's officials said three teenagers were using it while they were target shooting on private land southwest of Woodward. The teens who were target shooting were a safe distance from their target, and there was no property damage or injuries. In another story last week, word that federal agriculture officials had awarded $22 million in grants to gas stations in Iowa and more than a dozen other states to upgrade pumps, fuel lines, and storage tanks. The money is part of a program to increase the use of higher blends of ethanol fuel and biodiesel. Also last week, word that low-income Iowa residents who are struggling to pay their electric, natural gas, and water bills could receive up to $2,000 to help them avoid disconnected service. Governor Reynolds said she would use federal CARES Act money to launch a new program that will help Iowans who have lost income because of the coronavirus. In the world of college football this past weekend, Iowa State University defeated Texas Tech 31-15 at Jack Trice Stadium. And one more note before I go. Mason City is soon going to have a new Point of Pride, one that perhaps could rival Meredith Wilson's most famous creation. Wilson was born in Mason City and wrote the Broadway and movie hit The Music Man. Well, Mason City is about to get a grain bin, but not just any grain bin. This one will be the biggest one in the world. It's under construction at Golden Grain Energy in Mason City, and it will stand nearly 156 feet tall. But what's really remarkable is its volume. It will be capable of holding more than 2 million bushels of corn. The bin will have enough room to park a 767 Boeing jet inside, and that's mighty big indeed. Big enough to outshine Meredith Wilson's 76 trombones? We'll see. And that is your summary of the past week's news from all around Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart, leaving now, but planning to return to this same virtual seat on Friday, when I'll report on what makes news in Ames this week. I hope you'll be here as well. Now, don't even think about touching that dial, because there's much more to come straight ahead, right here on Local Talk.
So, 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 so. Today's phonology is the origin of the term Indian summer. Indian summer describes an interesting turn of events that occurs each autumn. After the first frost, a return to summer-like conditions is described as Indian summer. It is first recorded in Letters from an American Farmer, a 1778 work by the French-American soldier-turned-farmer J.H. St. John de Crèvecoeur. End quote. Then a severe frost succeeds, which prepares it to receive the voluminous coat of snow which is soon to follow, though it is often preceded by a short interval of smoke and mildness called the Indian summer. There are many references to the term in American literature in the following 100 years or so. In the 1830s, Indian summer began to be used figuratively to refer to any late flowering following a period of decline. It was well enough established as a phrase by 1834 for John Greenleaf Whittier to use the term that way when in his poem Memories he wrote of the Indian summer of the heart. As a climatic event, it is known throughout the world and is technically called a weather singularity, that is, a climatic event that recurs around the same time each year. The frequency, depth, and longevity of the weather pattern is clearly dependent on geography. It is most frequently associated with the eastern and central states of the United States, which have a suitable climate to generate the weather pattern, that is, a wide variation of temperature and wind strength from summer to winter. Many of those states are also famous for their areas of hardwood forest, which show up well during Indian summers when the leaves have already begun to turn and the sun is shining. So why Indian? Well, no one knows, but it is commonplace when no one knows. Many people have guessed, and here are a few of the more commonly repeated guesses. When European settlers first came across the phenomenon in America, it became known as the Indians' summer. The haziness of the Indian summer weather was caused by prairie fires deliberately set by Native American tribes. They would start the fires, and then in the spring, the lush greenery would attract their game of deer and buffalo, and that worked out well, so they would burn each autumn. Another suggestion is that it was a period when First Nation or Native American people harvested their crops. The phenomenon was more common in what were then North American Indian territories. Most assuredly, Indian summer is considered a bonus of beautiful autumn weather. After our first frost, we want beautiful weather. We want more beautiful weather to enjoy Iowa's natural resources and Iowa's beautiful lands. And that's our phonology for today. This environmental update is sponsored by the Outdoor Alliance of Story County, Story County's Conservation's Friends Group, working to enhance outdoor recreation, education, and conservation. Information can be found at oasco.org.
And you are listening to Local Talk here on KHOI Community Radio. Thank you, Patch Larbaum, for that phonology. Before that, you heard Despacito by Wu A Ki Kuna, which is a duo of musicians who celebrate the cultural and magical importance of music and dance in both northern and southern Indian or indigenous cultures. I'm your host for this hour, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for joining us. KHOI's Introducing the Candidate series brings local and regional candidates running in the general election to be held on November 3rd. We bring you here as many candidates as respond to our invitation to come on Local Talk for an interview. The views expressed by the candidates are neither endorsed or discouraged by KHOI. Our mission here is to provide you with public election information. Candidate Steve O'Rourke is the Republican candidate in the race for Story County Board of Supervisors. He's a former mortgage banker and a real estate broker and currently is a licensed public adjuster and owns Ames Westside Storage. Full disclosure, I am actually a client of his. I rent a storage space from him, but I don't think we've ever actually met in person, and we certainly have never talked politics before, so here we are. Thank you for coming on Local Talk, Steve.
You're welcome. You're a customer.
That's what happens when you have local politics, right?
Well.
Okay, so.
I don't know why. I've never met you. Our system's run by a computer kiosk. So.
That's right. Everything's automated, and it works very efficiently. So we've never actually seen each other. And we're speaking by phone now. To just get started, tell our listeners something about yourself that they'll not find on your website or your Facebook page or a search engine, something that might surprise them.
Well, I'm definitely an out-of-the-box type candidate, I think, because I actually got inside my truck because I'm sitting at the four-way stop sign south of Huxley this morning. I started at 5:30. I light my truck up in the dark while people are going to work, and I wave to them as they're going to work in the morning. So that's how I've been trying to get my name out in front of everybody around the county. And I've moved this truck throughout the county to the different communities. And what's kind of interesting is, this all came about because of COVID, and the way you campaign has definitely changed this year. So this was my kind of the out-of-the-box idea. But people have come up to me, you know, while I'm sitting in the truck or on the truck or, you know, waving wherever I'm at. Like right now it's raining, so I moved inside the truck for a bit. And I've learned a lot. Even though I've lived in the county 45 years, I've learned we've got different problems in different areas. So anyway.
So when you talk with people across the county, what are their most frequent concerns?
Well, I think one of the biggest concerns is people outside of Ames think that all our supervisors actually live in Ames. In fact, right now they're all within a few miles of each other, and that will continue. So some of the cities like Zering and Collins and Maxwell sometimes feel like they're not getting represented. And that's why I've been out in all those communities. In fact, my wife and I, we started our married lives in Maxwell, Iowa, underneath the veterinary clinic. So that's something that won't be on my website.
So what concerns do you hear people outside of Ames having?
Well, one of the things, like in the Maxwell area, it's access to the internet, high-speed internet. Another problem, then I've run across some water problems, tiling. That's north up around Barilla, up in there. And, of course, housing, that's, I got people talking to me about all the time, the cost. And that was one of the reasons I threw my name in the ring for this, because I think I've got a program I'd like to bring to Story County that could be a benefit to us. So,
okay, maybe
those are probably the three big ones right there.
Uh huh. Okay, maybe we should get back to the housing in a minute to hear what your idea is. But before we do that, you mentioned that you see yourself now. You don't live in Ames.
I actually live in an acreage outside of Ames, about a mile west of the Ames Country Club,
mm-hmm.
off Amron School Road.
So what would you, you said you would bring a different voice to the Story County Supervisors. Could you please explain what you mean by that?
Well, right now I think our supervisor board primarily has, we have a lot of government background, the folks do. I've got 40 years of self-employment, so I think I would bring more of a business aspect to the board, because in business, all my businesses that I've owned in 40 years all started because I recognized a problem, and then you start looking for solutions, and how business gets created. If you're really good and you've got enough solutions, people either buy your product or buy your service. And I've always operated with the intention I always leave people better off than I find them. And if you do that, and that's what I taught my kids, if you do that, then your customers or your business will take care of you.
So a big part of a job as a Story County Supervisor is working with the state legislators over funding issues, which is always, I don't know if you want to call it a problem, but it's an issue. always. How would you work with the legislature? What would you be your approach? And what would qualify you to work with the people in Des Moines?
Well, obviously, I've never worked with the legislature before. Mm-hmm. I actually approached one of our supervisors that served as my representative. I was trying to get a bill introduced to the state of Iowa that never got out of the funnel twice, which I had a hard time understanding why, but that was related to my public adjusting world. I think in my experience of 40 years working with people, and that's all this is working with people. I'm a very good networker, and I've always operated under the premise I'm only five people away from the person I need to really talk to, solve whatever problem I'm working on. So I'm not sure where this dog will track eventually, but through the different organizations I worked with up at Gilbert, obviously I worked with all different kinds of people with that too, and ran across different situations, even within our little community up there, and was usually involved around the school or the scouts or something, but there were issues. But, you know, we always seem to come to a common conclusion for the better for the whole, and then we moved on. So I think I can take experiences like that and just carry right into the supervisor role.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a quick learner.
Uh-huh. And now you mentioned that, you know, your experience with as a businessman yourself and as a problem solver is really what, you know, gives you the skill to do this. There's a pretty good chance that in the coming year or more, Story County businesses may be facing income decreases, partly because of the virus. How would you work with the business community to help adjust financially to what's happening to all of us?
Well, I just told somebody the other day, my business, you know, it's a storage business. My property taxes won't be going down. My insurance won't be going down. My MediaCom computer support system, that won't be going down. But our income definitely is down.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you suppose we got to do as a business? You got to start adjusting. There's going to be some things from the supervisor standpoint. I heard somebody say the other day, who was a state legislator, you just got to learn to spend less than what you take in. Because as soon as you're spending more than what you're taking in, now you're operating on a credit card. That's the way I look at it. We need to retire some debt, whatever debt we've got out there. We need to start getting, you know, retire it. And like I said, I do not have all the answers today as I sit here.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I tried getting some information about our financial report before I went on and spoke at the League of Women. I emailed something into our treasurer's office. I'm not sure if I had the right email or not, but that was probably 10 days ago, and I still haven't gotten a response back on that. You know, once I'm in the position, I'll learn who I need to contact and be able to keep the ball moving in a timely fashion. Let's put it that way.
So let's talk a little bit about your housing. You, in terms of your priorities, if you were elected, you've identified housing as your priority, as what motivated you for running for this office. Talk to us a little bit about what your vision is for that.
Well, I like real estate. My wife and I, personally, we've never, other than we lived underneath this veterinary clinic and I worked off the rent, we've never actually paid a dollar in rent for renting a home in our entire lives. So we bought a lot of real estate, fixed real estate, sold real estate. And real estate has been very good to us. And I think once people own property in a community, they become more involved in the community. And one of my businesses, the reason I became a mortgage I wasn't a broker. I actually had a mortgage banker's license, which is harder to get. That came about because we were marketing a product called Light Form Styrofoam Foams. You forms you film with concrete. And one night on a Sunday evening, I lost 6 projects in 2 hours because people couldn't get money. So I got off the phone. I told my wife, I said, we've lost lots of projects in the years we've been marketing this product because of money. So I said, I got to figure out how to get the money. And that's what got me into that world. So it was, again, solving a problem that I recognized. And eventually that led me to this program that I found down in Polk County, Neighborhood Finance Corporation. You know, everything is just a step by step. It's an evolution.
If I understand correctly, you have some ideas about how to make it easier for people to buy property or to develop repurposing property. Is that correct?
It's for more repurposing property because we're always talking about how we've got a shortage of affordable housing in Story County.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the other day I had a chance to visit with a lady that's renting in a mobile home court, and she told me she's spending $900 a month. And I didn't realize that's what the cost was to be in some of the courts.
Mm-hmm.
$900 goes a long ways towards a mortgage payment.
Mm-hmm. So your vision is to make to provide assistance for repurposing property that right now is not being used to make that more accessible to people?
Well, sometimes we've got homes in our smaller communities. We've got homes in Ames that need some TLC. They need some updating. They need, construction improvement, whatever it is. It could be roof, windows, siding. It could be a house that has no garage, and with this program, you can build up to a 2-car garage. So mm-hmm. you can make improvements on the property. Mm-hmm. But it's not like these are people with bad credit buying these homes. You got to have good credit, and you got to have some money to put down on them, but with this program, the lenders will lend up to 95% or whatever the value is. You still got to come to the table with 5% and credit, but it's not tied to income. It's not tied to the price of the home, and there is some oversight. The government has a similar program. I worked at, I did 2 loans as a mortgage banker with a program that was called an FHA 203K rehab at the time. And I've been out of that world for a while, since 2008, so that may not be what it's under today.
Mm-hmm. But you see it as a model.
Yeah, but uh-huh. The problem was there was no oversight.
Mm-hmm.
The homeowner, after they closed the loan, was given the money and then told, go get the project done. So a lot of these people were do-it-yourselfers, or they thought they'd find somebody to fix or build whatever they were trying to do. But because they were individuals, sometimes they couldn't find the contractors that would do the job. And what happened in my case as a mortgage banker, I had one case where the money got spent and wasn't used for what it was given to them for.
Right.
Yeah. And then became a problem.
Right.
So we don't want to get people in trouble either.
Right. Okay, we're speaking with Steve O'Rourke, who is a Republican candidate for the Story County Board of Supervisors. Steve, let me just ask you one more question before we wrap up. Story County is a largely agricultural county, and the issue of concentrated animal feeding operations, or CAFOs, have been a controversial issue in the past few years. Do you have any position on whether Story County should open up for more of the CAFOs?
I'll do whatever the state legislature tells me to do.
Uh-huh. Okay. Okay. Well, that's a succinct answer. Thank you so much for joining us. Do you have any parting? I'll kind of give you the last word here before you take off. One thing we have learned about you is you're an early riser.
Early riser, I go to bed late. So So just keep watching for me around the county because I'll be pedaled to the metal for the next 3 weeks. So wave at me and honk at me. It kind of puts a smile on my face.
Okay. Anything else before we end?
Vote for Steve O'Rourke.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Steve. We appreciate it.
Okay. Could I ask your name so I know who my customer is?
Oh, my name's Ursula Rudenberg.
Okay. Oh, I know that name. Okay. Now I've got to talk to you.
That's right.
Well, I enjoy talking to my customers.
This is one way to do it, to meet each other over the radio.
Yeah.
Okay, have a good day.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I'm Stephen Colbert. Do you want to vote in the 2020 election? Of course you do. So here's how you can get started voting in Iowa right now. Okay, first, make sure you're registered to vote. Iowa offers online registration. The pre-registration deadline is October 24th, so do it now. Active registered Iowa voters may have received an absentee ballot application in the mail. Fill it out carefully, sign where indicated, and return it to your county auditor. If you want to make sure you get your ballot in time to vote, request it now. Now, when you get your ballot, fill it out carefully, follow all directions, sign where indicated, and mail it back as soon as possible to the address provided. You can also hand deliver it to your county auditor's office until 9 p.m. on election day. Mailed ballots must be postmarked by November 2nd, so the U.S. Postal Service recommends sending it no later than October 27th. Just play it safe and do it right away. Okay, if you want to vote in person, you can cast an absentee ballot from October 5th to November 2nd. And of course, you can vote at your polling place on election day. Wear a mask, wash your hands, and go vote. So there you are, Iowa. So get out there and vote, Iowa. Remember back in February, you had some caucus chaos? Well, it's time to prove you can do election to perfection. Vote!
Thank you, Mr. Stephen Colbert, talking about voting in Iowa. And I'm Ursula Rudenberg here on Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. And some in our area are still recovering from the derecho storm. And FEMA assistance is available. Keith Morgan, who is the Story County Emergency Coordinator, is here to give some important information about FEMA Individual Assistance Program, along with Holly Stevens, who is a spokesperson for FEMA. Thank you for joining us, Keith and Holly. So let's just jump right in. How does one register for FEMA?
To register for assistance, an applicant can go to disasterassistance.gov or they can call the 800 number, which is 1-800-621-3362.
And tell us who actually is eligible for assistance right now.
So the primary applicants that we would have registered would be those that have sustained damages as of the August 10th derecho. We encourage folks to go ahead and register that have damages that created severe damage to their home. The primary thing for everybody to know is that insurance is actually their first go-to. So if you've sustained damages, we encourage you to go ahead and file with your insurance company first. And the reason for that is that FEMA is not able by federal law to duplicate insurance. And what we want, since the registration deadline is approaching on November 2nd, is for folks to go ahead and register now and then also submit their insurance documentation once they filed with their insurance.
So you can register if you also, if you have insurance as well?
Yes, you may. Likely what will happen is if you register and you have insurance, when you register, one of the questions that you will be asked is if you have insurance and what type of insurance. And that will generate a determination letter that will request additional information from your insurance company. And that typically is a settlement letter. So mm-hmm. what FEMA needs to see is what the insurance paid or would pay, and then FEMA can go ahead and compare the eligible damages. It's important for registrars to know that FEMA assistance is to cover uninsured significant damages that are going to impact the habitability of a home. So that is another thing that that folks will get a determination letter. If you've got minor damages that you can still live in the home, most of the time insurance will cover that. And so you may not necessarily be eligible for FEMA assistance if your insurance is already going to cover it.
Does this cover garages and sheds and other parts of the property besides the house itself?
Individual assistance actually does not cover outbuildings as far as sheds and garages. It's going to primarily be the living space that you occupy.
Mm-hmm. And your point here is to register first and then worry about sorting out the insurance later just so that you meet the deadline. November, what was the deadline again?
November 2nd.
Okay.
And actually what we want folks to do is file with your insurance first. But you can also register at the same time.
Okay, so make sure you register before Election Day is basically the deal.
That's right.
Right. Mm-hmm. So is this for Story County or does this also apply to neighboring counties?
Sure. So the designated counties are Benton, Boone, Cedar, Clinton, Jasper, Lynn, Marshall, Polk, Potashek, Scott, Story, and Tama counties.
Repeat again where one actually can register. We said that at the beginning, but it'd be good to repeat that.
Sure. Going online at disasterassistance.gov or calling our 800 number at 800-621-3362.
Okay. And we'll put that information on our website as well at khoifm.org. Now, I think you touched on this a little bit, but if you could just spell out again, if I understand what you're saying correctly, FEMA basically will cover what your insurance doesn't if it's damaged to your home. I'm kind of simplifying it, but is that really what you're saying?
That is. So again, federal disaster assistance, whether it's FEMA or the Small Business Administration, by law is not able to duplicate the benefits of an insurance policy. And so also from a FEMA perspective, the grant assistance is going to address home repairs that are going to make the home habitable again, you're going to possibly see if there's been personal property losses in terms of, you know, if you had bedding damaged or you know, if you had a tree that fell into a bedroom and destroyed the bedroom, then some of the things inside that bedroom may be eligible. There's a component also to federal disaster assistance is that an applicant may be issued a Small Business Administration loan package, which is actually a part of the federal disaster assistance package. And that is typically generated once you register for assistance. And that is going to be based on what, you know, how somebody answers the registration questions. And depending on the categories of the damages. So.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, the answer to your question is that federal disaster assistance cannot duplicate insurance benefits.
Right. And what is the Disaster Recovery Center in Ames? Is that the same thing you're talking about, or is that something different?
So the Disaster Recovery Center was a temporary location for individuals to bring those documents. So an example would be if an individual had registered for assistance, had received a determination letter that they needed to submit their insurance documentation, and they didn't have the ability to be able to fax or mail that insurance documentation, then they could go to the Ames Disaster Recovery Center and drop off the documents.
Mm-hmm.
And so typically a Disaster Recovery Center pre-COVID would have been sort of a one-stop shop. Individuals would go to a location.
It's kind of like a pop-up recovery center, right? Yeah,
that's right. A Disaster Recovery Center is a temporary location that is established to be mm-hmm. able to provide assistance.
But the one here ended last weekend, right?
Correct. Closed on Saturday.
Okay.
But what's important for everybody to know is that help is still available. So what we want to make sure people know is that just because the Ames Disaster Recovery Center closed, you can still call our 800 number to be able to talk to somebody one-on-one and be able to have them answer your questions. And that would be the same number that you would dial to register, which is the 1-800-621-3362 number.
Okay. And the website one more time?
Sure. It's disasterassistance.gov.
Okay. So assistance is still available. Take care of it before Election Day.
Registering is the primary thing, you know, by November 2nd. But people can still continue to call that 800 number after that November date if they're continuing to still work through their file.
Okay. We were speaking with
Holly. Have FEMA providing help.
Yeah. This is Holly Stevens. She's a spokesperson for FEMA. Holly, before you go, your last words, just what's it like helping people after the storm?
I've been in public service now 20 years, 15 years with FEMA, and I consider it an honor to be able to be a public servant and help survivors. We're very thankful to have local officials here in Story County and other parts of the state help out. Get the word out about people helping get assistance. And I very much enjoy working for FEMA.
Thank you so much, Holly. Really appreciate your coming and giving this important information for helping people in the aftermath of derecho. And thank you, Keith Morgan, who has been silent but present as well. Thank you, as always, for bringing us important information about emergency assistance.
Well, thanks, Ursula, and I appreciate KHOI helping us get this word out to Story County residents. Those that need it most hopefully have heard what we've had to say.
Okay. Thank you guys so much for coming. And Anna Banana is here to round out the show with her heart-to-heart messages. Anna, are you ready to give us an earful of comfort? What did you say? Comfort, information, comfort, inspiration, and joy. That's my version.
Okay, I like that version, Ursula. So I love today, appreciated listening and learning to all the interviews today. But let's get motivated this Monday with a heart-to-heart message that gets our week started in the right direction. And one of the ways that I'm going to get motivated is going to KHOI's auction house. And what I discovered is, I don't know how I missed it, but there's a Ridley's 1980s music trivia cards. And the bidding starts at $5. So totally going to check that out and a bid on that. And then, of course, there's that fabulous piano tuning by Tom Russell. So if you have a piano that needs tuned and you want to play a tune on his show, you can do that by bidding on his amazing auction item. So I hope everyone gets motivated to go to KHOI site to go bid on all those things, but not on the don't bid on the Ridley's thing.
the piano tuning, I'll disclose a little secret. Nobody has bid on that yet, and that is just an incredible opportunity. I know my father has a piano, and when he wants to have Tom Russell come and tune his piano, he has to get on a waiting list. So this is a fantastic opportunity to just like forget the waiting list, just get direct access to Tom Russell's piano tuning skills. Tom is the person who tunes all the pianos for Iowa State University, for visiting international concerts. He's a master piano tuner, and this is a great opportunity, and I can't believe nobody's noticed yet. So maybe I should tell my dad about it.
You should tell your dad, all those churches out there with pianos, and all those that are having to listen to their children play their piano at home right now probably want it tuned.
So Anna, how do people find it?
They go to our website and there's a yellow button, I think it's yellow, that says auction house. And you just click on it, view all the items, and you can find that Ridley's 1980s music trivia cards. Why did I say that? But anyway, so each week you get to spend time with Carol Pluckrose, and she shares a poem with her Facebook listeners on Sunday. And she shared this poem this last Sunday, which is To Be of Use by Marge Piercy. The people I love the best jump into work head first, without dallying in the shallows, and swim off with sure strokes almost out of sight. They seem to become natives of that element, the black sleek heads of seals bouncing like half-submerged balls. I love people who harness themselves an ox to a heavy cart, who pull like water buffalo with massive patience, who strain in the mud and the muck to move things forward, who do what has to be done again and again. I want to be with people who submerge in the task, who go into the fields to harvest and work in a row and pass the bags along, who are not parlor generals and field deserters, but move in common rhythm when the food must come in or the fire to be put out. The work of the world is common as mud. Botched, it smears the hands, crumbles to dust. But the thing worth doing well done has a shape that satisfies, clean and evident. Greek amphoras for wine or oil, Hopi vases that held corn are put in museums. But you know they were made to be used. The pitcher cries for water to carry, and a person for work that is real. And Carol shared this heart-to-heart message of why she read this poem this week. She says, "This is the second week I've chosen a Marge Piercy poem. As usual, I'm never sure what poem I will choose for my Sunday poetry slot, as often it comes to me from the particular mood of that week. This one's been another tough one here in the UK, with further restrictions, particularly in the north. It's heartbreaking to see the impact of the virus on people's livelihoods and mental well-being. The dystopia we find ourselves in requires a level of grit and resilience that many of us have never dealt with or imagined before. And with no sign and end, taking care of ourselves and others has never been more important. The very nature of human connection has been challenged. One major part of this has been the world of work. The part that meaningful work plays in our lives is a core component of our identity, whether paid or voluntary. Our human need to be in touch with each other, to work collectively, to be productive, to laugh, to enjoy is challenged like never before. I chose today's poem as it resonates to me this week, particularly when so many people's employment is in danger, which in turn has a significant impact on our mental health and purpose." And then she sends her warmest wishes to all of us this week. So I thank you, Carol, for your poem and your message. So back to you, Ursula.
Thank you, Anna Banana, for your heart-to-heart message. And you have been listening to Local Talk here on KHOI Community Radio. And we thank you for listening. And please remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening to Local Talk. Thank you for listening to KHOI. And we will see you again on the radio.
Were you convicted of a felony? Would you like to vote in Iowa? Now you probably can. On August 5th, the law in Iowa changed. That means most Iowans convicted of a felony can now vote as long as you've discharged your sentence, including probation, parole, supervised release, and special sentence. Find out more at youcanvoteiowa.org. That's youcanvoteiowa.org.
I'm Pat Schlarbaum, KHOI board member and contributor, like many others, to Local Talk, encouraging all of you to wear your mask in consideration for your fellow human beings. Wearing a mask will not be forever if we all pull together and get through this. So please wear your mask and take care of your neighbor.